Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people make friends? I'm just hoping you save some money. My job, not just to entertain, but to put it in context. Call me, 1-800-743-CBC. Tweet me, Jim Cramer. What can I say about this market? The inputs today, they're just plain bad. You can't have oil creeping up every day. You can't have mortgage rates about to climb again. You can't risk having the Fed look the wrong way if things are getting weaker sooner than expected. But how terrible are the inputs really? Should stocks have been down so harshly with the Dow slipping 397 points, S&P losing 0.72%, and the Nasdaq plunging 0.95%? The answer kind of is yes. But not because the inputs are all that terrible in reality. What drove stocks lower for the most part wasn't even consequential. If we get weaker job growth from Friday's non-farm payroll report, the narrative will shift again as everybody starts betting that the Fed will quickly cut interest rates to stem some sort of, hard landing. Long-term rates, which have been climbing higher since late last year, will probably top out around these levels, and the 30-year 4.5% really isn't even all that high historically. What really matters is that we haven't had a sell-off in so long that we've forgotten how to handle it. So tonight, let's go over the rules of the road. Yes, road rules for dealing with a sell-off. Well, what do you have to do first? You have to identify the real reasons for the decline, not the headlines. Now, we know that interest rates have gone up. We need to decide whether the move is significant. The answer to this historically is that this kind of move typically doesn't do much damage to the economy, and therefore not much to earnings, which is what we focus on in Mad Money. Sure, there's some weakness, as Paychex told us in the release today, something we'll plumb with them later on tonight. And I quote, the softening in hiring we started to see in the second quarter continued in the third quarter. There's more choppiness in hiring across customer segments and industry now. End quote. Worrisome? Only if you don't read the next line, which is, quote, our clients tell us they still can't find qualified employees and are not willing to hire just anyone at higher wage rates, especially in areas with minimum wage increases and aggressive legislative changes. End quote. What are we going to do with that? I mean, California mandated a higher minimum wage. Naturally, that's going to cut into hiring. And it is harder to find qualified people. That's okay. Nothing new. Next. Tesla's numbers were weaker than expected. I mean, much weaker. 387,000 vehicles when we expected them to sell more than 457,000. That was their biggest estimate miss in 7 years. And their first year-over-year decline since 2020. Tesla's a headline grabber, though, isn't it? Always will be. But let's unpack this. We know that there's been an awkward pause in electric vehicle buying in our country. China's hurting with real price cutting in the EV market. Berlin's been disrupted by sabotage. To me, this is simply par for the electric course in terms of America. We can blame higher interest rates and weakening economy, but honestly, I think the country's turn on EVs for now. It's like everyone wants one, already has one. Tesla's simply feeling what GM and Ford were feeling, okay? The real problem with Tesla is that it turns out to be a mortal car company and not an immortal tech company. Third issue is PVH, the big apparel company that's behind Calvin Klein and Tommy Hilfiger. That gave us a terrific number, absolutely. But then it jarred us by talking about a slowdown of some significant proportions. A forecast that caused the stock to drop 22% today. Now, when I checked the report, though, it was about weakness in Europe. And we're not going to extrapolate from Europe to the United States, where business remains much stronger. I said in our game plan last Thursday that the apparel stocks were coming in way too hot going into PVH's quarter. Well, that sure turned out to be the case, huh? but I don't have a solid read-through to our country. And then there's the weakness in the health insurers. Wow, Humana off more than 13% today. United Health down over 6%. CVS, which owns Aetna, shredding another 7%. Bad for the consumer? No, hardly. I mean, the Biden administration just decided not to give insurers a bigger rate increase for the Medicare Advantage plans. If the government had sided with the insurers, now that would have meant horrific health care cost inflation. Instead, it's good news for most Americans, even if it's awful for the managed care industry, and it is awful. Oil, tough, because it translates immediately into higher prices at the pump. That's why the refiners were so strong today. But don't forget, natural gas is also an important inflation input, and it's still trading at multi-year lows thanks to a supply glut. While we don't fill our cars and trucks with natural gas, we do heat our homes with it. So call it even, or at least maybe more even than people realize. To take it all in, we've got higher rates, but the impact on the economy is not profound. Meanwhile, the impact on the market is what you'd usually expect. People pay less for stocks when rates go up. We've just kind of forgotten that happens. Next item in the sell-off playbook of our checklist, road rules, has this pullback created any buying opportunities? For that, I perused the bottom 50 performers of the S&P 500 today before it came out today. And the biggest decliners, well, I wish I could say found something to buy. You know what? My investing club colleague and senior portfolio manager, Jeff Marks, and I did a special video for club members this afternoon highlighting the opportunities we're looking at and what we're near pulling the trigger on. But we would need more follow-through tomorrow to make that happen. Some of our stocks were down, but not enough to make a difference to our cost basis, meaning what we've already paid for the shares. I have no desire to buy the health insurers. When you get a stock shock verdict like they got for the administration last night, the analysts haven't even had time to get their acts together and do some downgrading. I bet you that's tomorrow's business. If you're inclined to bottom fish, that's the better opportunity. How about this retail off PVH? Remember, PVH was weakest in Europe, not America. The American apparel company stock most down today, VF Corp. But that's challenge maker of North Face. Well, 30% of its products are sold in Europe. You can't touch it. I do have my own TGX would be a great opportunity if we learn that PVH is suddenly going to start dumping inventory, or if clothing company Express might file for bankruptcy. However, PVH said that inventories were lean, so the off-price chains won't be able to sweep in and pick up the merchandise of the cheap. Homebuilders did get rocked by higher rates. That always happened. Last night, I mentioned that they're prolific buyers of their own stocks on any kind of rate weakness. But I'm hesitant to recommend a Lennar or D.R. Horton 3 days ahead of the big unemployment report. Hey, maybe Monday. Finally, what I'd look at is a sell-off in special situations. Last night and this morning, we huddled with GE Vernova, the power company that just got spun off by GE. It's the energy transition company with natural gas turbines and wind and software that will help upgrade the power grid so it can handle all this new electrical demand that comes from the data center. I thought Vernova seemed terrific before a bizarre late-day sell-off. More on that later. Now, let's go full circle on this sell-off. First, some perspective. We have to expect a 10% pullback every 2 years on average, according to legendary Peter Lynch, who used to run the Magellan Fidelity Fund. We sure didn't get that right. Second, we didn't see many stocks that were knocked down as part of an overall move in the S&P. Instead, we saw specific pockets of serious weakness. Finally, don't forget, the market was overbought coming in on the S&P oscillator that I always rave about. Special deal for any Siemens Investing Club member who wants it. That means we were due for a pullback, and given that it's still mildly overbought at 2.62% at the close this evening, well, the move might not be over. Bottom line, after a day like today, all you can do is patiently hunker down and wait for lower prices. Somehow, I think we'll get them. Brian in Maryland. Brian.
Hey, Maryland, booyah to you.
Booyah right back at you, Brian. What's going on?
Hey, I have a question about VRT, Vertiv. With the new NVIDIA AI chip requiring water cooling, and Vertiv specializing in water cooling data centers, do you think that Vertiv will become the next supermicro computer?
Well, here's the problem. Vertiv did anticipate what's going on with NVIDIA. That's why the stock is up 60%. It does have the legendary Dave Cote as chairman, but I do want to see if it can pull back a little because it's been a straight line, and straight lines do concern me. Let's go to Howard in Maryland. Howard.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Howard. What's up?
Jim, first, I'm calling from the home of Francis Scott Key and the Star Spangled Banner.
Wow. I hope everybody's doing okay there.
UAA, Under Armour, will it become a merry-go-round stock, or will it ever prosper once more?
Well, I'm always happy to have Kevin Plank on, but it does seem that that's a cutthroat business. And we know that, look, you got Hoka with Deckers, you got Nike not doing well, you got New Balance. It's a dog-eat-dog world that Kevin finds himself in, and that's a tough situation for anybody. Let's go to Kevin in New York. Kevin.
Hey, Jim. Thank you for taking my call.
Wanted to get your take on Verizon. Been holding it for a couple of years and at the break-even point. What do you think about its future?
I think Verizon's actually getting better. I had been concerned for a while when the stock was at 8% yield that maybe something might be wrong, but no, the company's pulled out. It was just a couple of things that were dogging it, and I think it's a good situation to buy a 6.25% yield with a stock at 42. I like Verizon. All right. Today's sell-off might seem like a perfect opportunity to buy, but I want you to be patient here. I think there are even better prices waiting for us on the horizon. Remember, lower prices are better prices. So, Mad Money Tonight. The price of cocoa is going absolutely loco. So what are the technicals saying about the future of this hot commodity? And, of course, read through to Hershey. I'm going off the charts to find out. Then Paychex is out with its small business survey tomorrow, and we're getting an exclusive preview tonight on the state of the backbone of our country. And the new GE is here with the industrial kingpin breaking up into Vernova, its GE business. It's called GE Vernova and GE Aerospace. So where do I come down on the two stocks? I'm breaking it all down. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I always tell you, please wait for the conference call before you trade. This morning, we got a confusing set of results from Paychex, the payroll processor for small and medium-sized businesses, also handles outsourced human capital management that we like so much. At first glance, the numbers look suboptimal, with revenues coming in weaker than expected, management cutting their full-year revenue growth forecast. But despite trading down more than 5% at the open, it was actually down 10 bucks at one point. The stock rebounded into positive territory during the conference call. Why? Because Paychex revealed that the revenue shortfall wasn't as bad as it seemed. It wasn't even a shortfall. They simply didn't recognize revenue from their employee retention tax credit service because there's some legislation in the Senate that could affect that line of business. At the end of the day, the stock was up nicely, which is pretty good for Paychex, given that it often pulls back in response to strong numbers. So what do we make in this quarter, and what do we make about the state of small and medium-sized business in this country? Let's go straight to the source with John Gibson, the president and CEO of Paychex. Learn more, Mr. Gibson. Welcome back to Mad Money.
Jim, it's great to be back with you.
Well, John, I got to tell you, I always tell people, please, let's hear management out. This was actually a very fine quarter, and the only hair that I saw on it was the difficulty of companies to get the right people. Otherwise, things are pretty on target, aren't they?
Yes, it was quite a roller coaster ride this morning, and I'm glad we got our story out. So we had a really solid third quarter. We've had a good solid 9 months in the fiscal year. Adjusted earnings per share exceeded consensus. We reaffirmed our guidance for earnings per share for the full fiscal year at double digits. Demand was strong. New client volumes were good. Our retention was in line with expectations, with our HR business actually hitting a new record in revenue retention. As you pointed out, revenue growth was impacted by the wind down of the government ERTC program, and also softer hiring than we would have expected in our client base in an economy that's growing over 3%. So when you exclude the ERTC impact, our revenue grew 7% in the quarter, actually accelerated in the third quarter over the first half of the fiscal year. And that, Jim, that was in face of this hiring softness that we saw against our expectations.
But I also, John, I mean, you talked about the idea of what the government does. I mean, I want to pick on the government and as large as a state, but the number of changes that the government is doing and the inability of a small, medium-sized business company to keep up with it, I think this is one of the secrets of paychecks. It's just too darn hard to run a business in this country with the government intervening like this.
You know, Jim, I will tell you, it is so challenging to be a small business owner today. It's a very challenging labor market, difficult to find quality people. You're dealing with inflation. And then, as you said, you throw on top of that the regulations. It's interesting in our index. Now, Jim, some of the information I'm going to share is exclusive to you and your guests. We're not going to announce the index until tomorrow morning. But in our index, finally in March, we actually saw a slight increase in the job index. And January and February were really impacted. We've been going down for 3 months of moderation. And a lot of that was in the West. And a lot of that was concentrated in California, where there's a lot of things going on with minimum wages and additional regulations. We saw about 40 additional minimum wages across the country. And that really put pressure on small business owners. And how did they react? They reacted by not hiring, and they reacted by lowering the number of hours. So, in fact, workers earned less weekly because of the control of hours.
Yeah, I mean, economics class told you that would happen, but these guys aren't necessarily focused on that. But let's focus on your survey that is exclusive to us. I'm glad you mentioned that, because wage growth for small business workers continue to moderate. But the national index is really, you know, it's not bad. I mean, if I were the head of the Fed, I would say, you know what, things are going our way. Things are slowing down. The travel and leisure slowed down since pandemic. I mean, to me, it's a report that shows that there's good health in our country.
No, absolutely. What I see, Jim, is continued moderation. The things that Fed's been doing is working. We see moderation but growth in the job market. I think more of the job issue is a supply issue. And as you said, on the wage front, we continue to see that moderate and go down. It was 3.27 in March. But what I look at is look at the weekly earned. Again, it's what you take home that counts. And that's down at 3%. And so I do think what the Fed is doing is working. It has been working. We've seen a steady decline in wage inflation over the past really 12 months.
Well, that's exactly what we do want. Now, I had Larry Fink on recently from BlackRock. He's talking about trying to find new ways to make it so that that people save for retirement, and that making it so that it's almost, you try to be like it's mandatory. Any suggestions about how we can all go forward to make that? Because we all know that people are living a little bit longer, and they don't have enough money by the time they get to where they retire.
Yeah, you know, Jim, the retirement crisis is something we know a lot about. We're the largest 401k record keeper in the country. We supply most small businesses with their 401k starter plans, and we deal with their employees every day in trying to educate them on the importance of saving. As you well know, a lot of states and several states have implemented mandatory retirement. Matter of fact, you know, our 401k business is one of our fastest growing businesses. Actually, in the third quarter, it accelerated again, double-digit growth for multiple quarters in a row. What I think government policies, we have the Secure Act 2.0 that was passed by the federal government. We're out there educating people. We need to continue to do more education. What we find is employers know they need to have a retirement plan for their employees to attract employees, but it's also challenging for their employees to save. Inflation has really put a crimp on employees being able to save. And we even see that in our hardship withdrawals that we've seen when inflation was really high, people going in and taking emergency hardship withdrawals out of their 401k. And that's devastating 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
Yeah, I'm looking at my executive producer, Regina Gilgan, right now, because when I hear this, I think, well, what can we do? What Paychex could do with us, I don't know. But we have to make it so if you have a 401k, you got to contribute to it. Larry Fink was telling me that a lot of people have 401k, but they don't want to be in it. And that's just, that's crazy.
Yeah, Jim, as I said, you know, a lot of these, a lot of the plans really require that you participate in it. We know there's a lot of education that we do with our participants, both through our technology and through our advisory services to educate employees. And I think employers need to take a more active role in making this an important part of their employee onboarding process. We're actually doing it digitally. When a client's employee comes onto our system, we're actually educating them on the benefits and getting them signed up and getting them auto-enrolled. That's absolutely critical.
All right, now one last question. I see you're doing some artificial intelligence. I wanted to get a little more sense of where it's helping you and where it's helping your customers.
Yeah, Jim, I tell you, we've been doing this over a decade. We have over 200 AI models. We launched several additional AI models in the third quarter, and we've already seen immediate benefits. Focus on client retention. So the way that we're anticipating, we're seeing our clients and what they're asking our service providers, what they're doing in our system. We're using that to create analytics to understand how we can better serve them. We're using in upsell models for our sales teams. So we're identifying that this 401k, we're seeing that restaurants in Rochester and New York have signed up for a lot of 401ks. We're finding the restaurant that doesn't have one, and we're going to them and saying, smart, hey, you're falling behind. If you want to retain your employees, you need to get involved. So we're using it that way. And then you look at what we're doing. We're monitoring across the board all of our communications with our clients so that in real time, we can really see what is going on and what's on their mind. And that's helping us really drive innovation and product launches. For example, compensation and what I should pay. We're launching a joint service where we're going to have over 750 million compensation data points available in our reporting that will give a small business owner some idea of whether they should be paying more or paying less to keep an employee.
Oh, that's terrific, because people, it's kind of just an amorphous area. You could probably save your clients a lot of money. Well, John, first of all, thank you so much for giving us the exclusive on your index, which I think shows that we're on the right track. And secondly, thanks for coming on a day where people got a great opportunity to buy Paychex, because people just don't wait until the calls. John Gibson, President and CEO of Paychex. Thank you, sir. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, is this market cuckoo for cocoa? Indulge in a decadent look at the commodity when we go off the charts next.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Every now and then, very rarely, you wind up in a situation where a previously boring commodity suddenly gets exciting. Right now, it's cocoa. For decades, cocoa has been arguably the least exciting commodity under the sun, with cocoa futures hovering between $1,500 and $3,000 per ton since the early 80s. For most of the past decade, they bounced between $2,000 and $3,000. Now, though, we've had a supply scare that sent the price of cocoa futures beyond $10,000 per ton in recent days. $10,000. Even the most bullish of bulls probably didn't see that coming. Tough time to be a snack maker. between the rise of these GLP-1 weight loss drugs and ridiculous increase in the cost of chocolate, difficult to be Hershey, at least for now. And that's why tonight we're going off the charts with the help of our resident commodities expert, Carly Garner. She's a brilliant technician, co-founder of DeCarly Trading, also author of High Probability Commodity Trading. Last year, she pretty much nailed both the top in oil and the bottom, too. 3 weeks ago, she made a bullish call on gold. Wow, so far that's been dead right. Now she's got some controversial opinions on cocoa. First, I want you to take a look at the monthly chart of the cocoa futures. This is nuts. As Garner sees it, there's absolutely no logical reason for cocoa prices to have reached these heights. None. She thinks this move is nuts. While the market assumes the demand for cocoa isn't too price sensitive, Garner disagrees. At the end of the day, chocolate is a want, not a need. If it gets too expensive, people just switch to something else. How do we get the spike? Okay, according to some third-party analysts, cocoa output will drop to around 4.5 million tons during the current growing season. That's down 350,000 tons from the previous year. So that's a 7 to 10% decline in production. While that's a meaningful hit, Carter can't see how it justifies this crazy move, rocking from $2,000 to $10,000. If anything, she believes cocoa prices should have been capped at $6,000. Which is where the last major ceiling resistance came in on the monthly chart. We simply don't have enough supply data on the supposed shortfall, and Garner believes that this is a situation where high prices will ultimately result in demand destruction. I agree with her. Of course, once cocoa broke out of above $6,000, the gains accelerated, resulting in what sure looks like a parabolic move, doesn't it? You know, I don't like those. When you look at the relative strength index for the RSI, an important momentum indicator, it's now above 90 on the monthly chart. I've actually only seen that just a few times. That means this thing is wildly overbought. That 90-plus reading is incredibly high. On top of that, you see these two black lines on the chart? These are the Bollinger Bands that measure volatility. Normally, there's one above the stock and one price and one below the stock price, but cocoa's actually broken out above the Bollinger Band. Statistically speaking, these are two wildly improbable events. Probably a very big short position going awry there. If you're unfamiliar with the Bollinger Bands, they're worth a second of time. There's a visual representation of a typical bell curve. The top band is two standard deviations above the 20-month moving average, while the lower band is two standard deviations below it. When you see the price of something smashing through the top band, that's important. This tool, developed by John Bollinger, was created, he used to come on CNBC all the time, was created to identify overbought or oversold assets. According to statistical theory, Garner notes that roughly 95% of all price action should occur within the Bollinger Bands. Anytime something's trading outside of the bands, that's a statistical outlier. And in this business, outliers rarely last long. Again, why this thing is temporary. In the case of cocoa, it spent the majority of March trading outside the two standard deviation Bollinger Band. And by the tail end of the month, it's traded beyond three standard deviations of the 20-month moving average. Again, going by basic statistics, the price action is in anything should be contained within three standard deviations about 99.7% of the time. And that's why Garner thinks this action in cocoa is a total anomaly. Although relatively rare, she points out that we've seen this type of commodity overreaction a handful of times since 2020. First was lumber as the economy opened back up after the COVID shutdowns. Same thing happened to crude oil and wheat prices when Russia invaded Ukraine in the spring of 2022. Then natural gas went to statistically absurd levels after the Nord Stream 2 pipeline was sabotaged later that year. In each case, prices eventually came right back down. Garner doesn't know when or where the current cocoa rally will run out of steam, but she knows that in commodity markets, every boom is followed by an inevitable bust. Now, there's something very strange that's happened with cocoa beyond just the price spike. Garner noticed that the risk assets like crude oil or the S&P 500 now seem to be tracking cocoa. Take a look at this daily chart with cocoa in gray, the S&P in green, and oil in black. Kind of interesting. These three assets are now settling in the same direction, roughly 90% of the time, albeit by different magnitudes. For Garner, this is a sign that something other than the fundamentals of supply and demand is driving the action in cocoa. Maybe the algorithmic traders have created a linkage that shouldn't really exist. What else might be going on here? Okay, cocoa is mainly grown in underdeveloped parts of the world. That's where news and data are often unreliable. Here in America, we got this government agency charged with collecting supply and demand data on commodities. But less developed countries, they can't really do that. Given that 60% of the world's cocoa comes from Ivory Coast, Ghana, and Indonesia, we just don't have a great insight into this market. Not only do we lack good statistics, but some of these regimes might be eager to release misleading information in order to manipulate the price of the stuff. So Garner says not to take headlines from these places at face value. On top of that, she thinks the cocoa futures are inherently quirky because they trade on the ICE exchange, which doesn't offer round-the-clock trading. This is an exchange that's mainly caters to traders in London. So Coca starts trading at 4:45 a.m. Eastern and closes at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Although, also because obtaining real-time Coca data is expensive, most users are operating on delayed price information. So I'm talking about some murky analysis. Now, all that said, Gartner thinks this Cocoa rally has overshot reality. There's a legitimate reason why it happened. Originally, Ghana and the Ivory Coast got hit with excessive rain that damaged crops, only for that to be followed by a drought that made things worse, hence the worries about a big hit to worldwide production. That, the result? We're seeing the lowest recorded cocoa supplies since the late 1970s. Put this move in context, take a look at the extremely long-term chart going back to the 70s. Back in 76, 77, we had a cocoa shortage that very similar. Parabolic move right here, right? With the price vaulting from $1,000 to $5,000 per ton on a percentage basis. It's the same move we're seeing right now here, okay? But Garner notes that that rally ultimately faded and gave way to decades of lower prices. The bottom line, well, guess what? The charts interpreted by Carly Garner suggest that this insane cocoa rally will run out of steam, maybe even similar to this one, and will rapidly deflate. In fact, she's betting we will not see these levels again in our lifetime. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Eric in Connecticut. Eric.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
I am good, Eric. How about you?
Good, good. A big Huskies booyah to you.
Oh, my God, yes, absolutely. Right back at you. What's going on?
Yeah, so my question is regarding Costco's. I've been a longtime shareholder of Costco's. I just, a few months ago, I liquidated about 2,000 shares, and I'm seeing a pullback in Costco's recently. I'm not sure if this now is a good time for reentry, or I should just take my profits and hold back for a little while on that. And second question is, do you see a stock split in the near future for Costco's?
You know, I've got a piece that I'm doing, that I'm working on about whether Costco should indeed split its stock. I think they should. It, of course, doesn't create any new value, but I understand it. Now, what you want to focus on is that Costco's retreat is actually at a level where we have been saying for the CNBC Investing Club is you need to start buying. So my answer to that is I don't want to be two-faced. I said start buying. I can't walk away and tell you not to. I think it's a very good level to start a position in Costco. All right, the charts interpreted by Carly Garner suggests this parabolic move in cocoa will run out of steam. And when prices do start to drop, Garner's betting we will not see these levels again in our lifetime. Much more we have money at. How about these spin-offs keep coming? Yesterday was 3M, the Solventum. Today's GE's turn. Now that the legacy industrial split into an energy colossus and an aerospace kingpin, what should you make of the two stocks going forward? We've got some ideas. We'll give you our take on Vernova and GE Aerospace, fresh off the spin. Then the era of the stock split, as I just mentioned, is upon us, and Chipotle's leaving the charge. But why do I think this move is so important in the market as a whole? I'm sharing the reasons. And of course, all your calls, rapid fire, tonight's edition, the lightning round. So stay with Cramer. When it rains, it pours. Yesterday, 3M spun off its healthcare business as Solventum, something I talked about last night. And today, General Electric spun off its power business as GE Vernova. This GE breakup was a long time coming in, roughly two decades of underperformance. Oh, my God, then Larry Culp comes in, all right, as CEO in 2018. And after stabilizing the business and navigating the early portion of the COVID-19 pandemic, he introduced his vision for how to turn things around. That was in late 2021. He wanted to split the business into three separate companies, one for healthcare, one for power, and one for aerospace. He wanted all investment-grade properties. GE Healthcare got spun off at the beginning of last year. You know, I like it so much. We bought it for the Travel Trust. Rallied from 54 at the time of the spinoff to $88 today. I have been telling club members that he can go to $100. I like that stock. Meanwhile, GE itself has shot up 150% over the same period. Like I keep telling you, Wall Street loves breakups. Colt's plan to unlock value has already been a tremendous success. But now we need to assess what GE Vernova and the remaining GE Aerospace are worth on their own now that they've split. First, let's talk Vernova. This is a colossus in the energy industry. It makes natural gas turbines. That's right. They call them turbines, not turbines, along with equipment from nuclear, hydroelectric and steam power. This is the core business and it throws off a ton of cash. At the same time, Vernova's got some very big exposure to wind turbines and electrical infrastructure. Whenever you hear about efforts to modernize the power grid, know that these guys are getting a piece of that. And there's a lot of money here. Because Biden's various stimulus packages, especially the bipartisan infrastructure bill, have poured tens of billions of dollars into grid modernization that is so needed. At the same time, the rise of artificial intelligence has created this unheard of demand for electricity because the data centers that power these platforms consume tremendous amounts of power. Electricity demand is now growing at a 5% annual clip, which is huge for GE Vernova. And by the way, the grid hadn't grown at all for like the last 20 years. Putting it all together, the core power business is the workhorse division, contributing the vast majority of the company's earnings, and right now throwing off tons of cash, even as it still manages to grow at a mid-single-digit clip.
Buy.
The electrification division is the growth engine, as it's growing at a double-digit clip. And while wind is the obvious laggard for the whole enterprise, I think you could be wrong to give up on it. The onshore wind business has already started to turn a lot of cash there. I bet the offshore wind unit can follow suit, which would allow Vernova's overall wind division to turn a profit next year. But offshore is very hard. Okay, as I say it, wind power still has a lot of room to run. It's the greatest renewable source. So we know they're going to put a lot of money in it. And I think that many green energy plays involve wind. Looking forward, GE Vernova's offered some pretty impressive forecasts, both for this year and next year and longer term. This year, the company expects 2 to 5% revenue growth, substantial margin expansion. Vernova sees its earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization margin growing from under 2% last year to the high end of the mid-single digits. That's incredible. If you assume that means 6%, and given the revenue guidance, that implies the EBITDA could grow by roughly 200% year over year. And EBITDA is the right metric when you're dealing with this kind of capital-intensive business. Management also sees its free cash flow going from around $100 million last year to somewhere between $700 million and $1.1 billion this year. And those numbers should get even better in 2025. GE Vernova is very confident in the future, in part because they've got a massive backlog, $116 billion spread between $40 billion in equipment and $75 billion in services orders. Those are remarkable. If the company can hit its longer-term forecast, this stock will be a fantastic buy. But beyond the numbers, I like GE Vernova because the company's set up perfectly for the energy transition. That's expected to take place over the next two decades. Their biggest business for now is selling natural gas turbines for power plants. Natural gas is already much cleaner than coal and should be the bridge fuel that takes us from fossil fuels to alternatives. It's the decarbonization strategy that a lot of companies have. But even within the power segment, GE has other businesses. They've got nuclear, they're trying, hydro, and steam that represent clean energy. Regular viewers know I love nuclear, and nothing's cleaner than hydroelectric power. Over time, these businesses, along with wind, will gradually supplant natural gas turbines in importance. Meanwhile, GE Vernova's electrification business is perfect for this moment, when the world desperately needs to build out more infrastructure to keep those data centers running. It doesn't hurt that this company has a pristine balance sheet. I don't know how they did that, but Larry did it. And that stock's joining the S&P 500 out of the gate, which should help alleviate some of the early selling you typically see in some spinoff situations. One of the reasons why I think the stock did so well today. Finally, I am impressed with CEO Scott Strazik, who's made a great case for this company on Wall Street. He was once walking the street this morning. He was sensational. I love the board of directors. The chairman, Steve Angel, is also the chairman and former CEO of Linde. That's a Cramer fave industrial gas powerhouse. They've also got Nick Akins. Remember him? He's the former CEO of American Electric Power. And then Arnold Donald, the former CEO of Carnival Cruise. That's how I feel about GE Vernova, the company. What about the stock? I think it's still worth owning, especially since after spending most of the day in positive territory, it tumbled into the close and ended the day down 1.4%. This is very intriguing. There had to have been some sort of program that dumped the stock. While spin-offs often have a lot of volatility in their first few months, I recommend gradually building a position in this one if you had a chance to buy it on weakness. Solventum, we said the same thing, and that stock got hammered. How about the remainder of GE, which has changed its name to GE Aerospace? Now it's basically a pure play on aircraft. Look, the aerospace division was the crown jewel of the old GE, even when the overall business was in dire straits. GE has a dominant position in engines for both narrow-body and wide-body aircraft, which are the top choices for intra-country travel and international flights, respectively. They do have a fantastic service division with great cash flow. The only concern here is the company's exposure to Boeing, which seems to have forgotten how to consistently make safe planes. But even if Boeing's new plane deliveries get delayed, that boosts demand for aftermarket parts from GE, a great business. At the end of the day, the world is desperate for commercial aircraft, and GE makes the best engines. Really, the only serious worry with GE Aerospace, and GE Vernova for that matter, is that GE has already been such an amazing performer over the past 15 months. Some of the upside might from this breakup might have already been captured in GE's monster rally. Again, stocks tend to be volatile after a breakup, so there's no need to buy either GE Vernova or GE Aerospace immediately if you don't own them already. Let's wait and see. But the bottom line, both the new GE Aerospace and GE Vernova are worth owning going forward. As long as you're disciplined about building a position. I want you to take your time, don't buy all at once, and wait for a pullback before you truly pounce on what I think will be two terrific long-term winners. Ultimately, I'm giving you my okay to do some buying. Mad Money is back after the break.
Coming up, hit us with your best shot. An electrified fast fire lightning round is next.
It is time. It's up the white round. Chris Ramirez for Ralph Goldner. It's him. Just with your hill runner. It's him. It's Steph. We're going to play this out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Skeet? That's over. The lightning round. Kramer is over. So Joe in New Jersey. Joe.
Hello, Mr. Kramer. Thank you for taking my call and all that you do for us.
Oh, thank you, Joe. How can I help you?
With a buy rating from Goldman Sachs, is Aris Water Solutions a buy?
Hidden gem, but you know, I shouldn't say it's not hidden of late, because this water producer, water recycler of the Permian has almost doubled. So I want to hold back. It's been a great win. Let's see if we can get it back to 10. I want to go to Charlie in California. Charlie.
Hey, Jim, how's it going?
Not bad. How about you, Charlie?
Yeah, pretty good. So I've been looking at some dividend stocks, and I've been having this one keep coming back on my radar. I want to see what you think. AGNC.
No, take a look at how that stock has done over any period. Take a look about 12 years, 15 years. It just goes down. I don't want you to touch that stock. Let's go to Chris in Florida, please. Chris.
Hey, good afternoon, Jim. Booyah.
Booyah. What's up?
My question is Alibaba. I've held on to it for years, and I'm wondering
if you have to own one, it is going to be Alibaba. That is the one that has the most American-like financials. I'm not a favorite fan of Chinese stocks, but Baba is the one to own if you want to go there. Let's go to Jim in Pennsylvania. Jim.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you betcha. What's going on?
Jim, I need your opinion. Would you trade AMD for ARM Holdings?
Well, you know what? 6.5 dozen, they're both really great companies. And I do like AMD here, although it does seem like it's finally coming down a little. So I'm not going to like ARM, too. It's too hard for me. Let's go to Greg in Illinois, please. Greg.
Jim, what's up? A big robot booyah to ya. Thomas Petterfee founded this company in 1978, and it's quickly pushing all-time highs as a top five prime broker. My stock is Interactive Brokers. Are you with me?
Yeah, I am with you. I think it's an incredibly well-run company. Everybody feels that way that I know. It's been remarkable. By the way, here's a twofer. Do you see Schwab? Schwab came all the way back from recommended 53. I think you're in good hands there. Let's go to Mandy in Maryland. Mandy.
Hi, Dean. How are you?
I am good, Mandy. How about you?
I'm hanging in there. Thank you. Thank you so much for all your teaching and advice. A shout-out to you and your staff.
You're very kind. Thank you. Very gracious. How can I help?
I bought a few shares of this stock today. I was wondering, should I add, or there is another stock which might do better? The stock is PWR.
Quanta. Qantas is fantastic. My friend Stephanie Link likes it too. Qantas is an ultimate great infrastructure play. I think you've got a winner there. Let's go to Joe in New York. Joe.
Booyah. Yeah, booyah.
Booyah, Joe.
All right. Listen, I love this show. Admire your passion. Need your wisdom today.
Okay.
Charter Communications.
No, that's an awful stock. That may actually be the most awful stock that I know. I'm putting that in the Pantheon awful. I mean, honestly, yeah. I mean, Pantheon awful, Charter, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. When we return, Kramer's doing splits, while Chipotle's decision is a win for home gamers. Will other big caps follow their recipe? Keep it here.
Stock splits are meaningless. Or are they? If a stock splits 2-for-1, okay, just 2-for-1, you'll now have 2 shares of the same stock, each at half the price. Consider it like a pencil. Now, if you split it in half, you don't have more pencil. You have two half-sized pencils and nothing more. There's not an ounce of additional value created. Yet the data is unassailable. Since 2010, when a stock splits, it tends to outperform the median stock in the S&P 500 over the next 10, 20, and even 65 days. In fact, the median stock splitter saw a 4.1% increase over the next 65 days versus a 2.7 median gain for the S&P. It's hard to view this data, courtesy of Strategus, as anything other than dispositive. So in theory, splits are meaningless, but in practice, they can give your stock a nice boost. Why does this matter so much? Because for a long time, companies scoring stock splits as a big shot investors pay commissions by the share. So a high dollar stock has lower commissions than two lower dollar stocks after a 2-for-1 split. I constantly get pushback when I recommend splits because I want more retail investors to come into this wealth creation machine, and I'm not going to give up. I even badgered Jensen Huang, the legendary CEO of NVIDIA, recently when I interviewed him at the huge GTC conference 2 weeks ago. 150 people I saw this weekend who all told me, please tell him thank you. They all also want something that I know is pedestrian and doesn't add value. They want a stock split. Why can't you give it to us?
Well, we'll think about it. Today is not the day to announce it, as you know.
No, I know it. I apologize. It's meretricious.
Yeah, we've done stock splits in the past. One of the things that I really like about stock splits, by the way, is that it makes for the stock purchase for our employees and others.
Yes, that's what Walmart says too.
Yeah, it's a good thing. And we want to make sure that we take care of our employees. They do such an incredible job for us.
What a great time we had out there with him. All right, out of nowhere, though, comes the very reasonable voice of Jack Hartung, the incredible chief financial and administrative officer at Chipotle, who's embraced the concept of the stock split and has shareholders voting on a 50-to-1 split, which would be sensational for anyone who doesn't want to pay $3,000 a share for this thing. Even though this split would cause a flood of new shares and therefore a flood of commissions for the big institutions who want to buy large positions in Chipotle, Jack told us there's been no pushback whatsoever by any of his institutional investors, none at all. Well, of course, they should care more about Chipotle's unbelievable performance. It'd be strange to criticize a company where if you bought $750 of stock on the IPO price, you now have $100,000 today. Now, Jack explains that Chipotle's doing this split because it incentivizes its managers with stock, but it's cumbersome and unsatisfying for them to get fractions of a share. While you can trade fractional shares now, it's probably dispiriting to get that as part of your compensation. As Jack told us,
it was getting harder and harder for us to get the right denomination because we reward our top performing managers with stock in the company. We want them to celebrate our success with us. And it was getting harder and harder where if you wanted to reward a manager with $4,000 worth of stock, you'd either have to award $3,000 or $6,000.
All right, this is similar to what the legendary Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart, had to say about the importance of the split. He thought it was essential to keep Walmart's share price in a reasonable range, rather than fractions, so it was accessible to all of his associates. He wanted to give them a sense of ownership, too. That philosophy is why they did a 3-for-1 split earlier this year. I applaud that. Now, I know all about the fractional shares, and I'm in favor of them, but here's there's nothing like owning a full share of stock. If we're going to bring regular people back into this market, and there's credible evidence of an upturn among individual investors, then this is another thing we need to see. I know that high-dollar stocks like NVIDIA, Deckers, Costco, BlackRock, Eli Lilly, ServiceNow could truly benefit from an influx of new investors, but they'll never get these people unless they split their stocks. Given that institutional money managers won't push back on a winner and the natural aversion to many buying fractional shares, it's time the people running these companies start giving us stock splits. And hey, it's got the added advantage of making your stock go higher, even if in theory it shouldn't work that way. But it does. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise you'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories, but your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.